beforehand, you do say a bracha later. I wanted to say something, if possible, on what I believe is a good way to end this weekend, and that is with the next week's parsha. We already, exhausted Parshat Vayetchanan in every which way, shape, and form. So let's go on to Parshat Ekev, which is the parsha this week. So I'm sure you hear a lot about it this week from Rabbi Ellis, and I'm sure that as the week goes on, you'll be able to exhaust that too. But allow me to just add one perspective on it, which I believe will be able to properly summarize the weekend that we just spent together. In order to do that, allow me to first make a bracha on this coffee. I think it's food and it's delicious.
Come back soon, Rabbi, we'll have to work up.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. In this week's Parsha, Moshe makes a statement that if a rabbi ever made the statement, I think that he'd be thrown out the front door because it's not nice. Moshe Rabbeinu says in this week's Parsha that God's going to help you when you get to Israel. He's going to ensure that you're going to win all the wars against the seven nations that inhabit the land. And don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. And in the midst of saying that, Moshe Rabbeinu says, but you should know, lo b'tzidkatcha u'b'yosher levavcha tabal ha'reshet et artzam. You are not going to get the pleasure of succeeding in war because you're so great. Because of your honesty, or because you're a tzaddik, or because of anything you did. And the pasuk continues in saying that you should remember that you guys messed up endless times in the desert. And he starts numerating what they were. Let's just go around the table here and remember all the times that they messed up in the desert. You don't have to think too hard. Let's go.
Golden calf.
Complaining water.
Complaining for water and food. What else?
The spies.
The man.
Korah's rebellion.
You name it, it's in there. God then says it's not because of you. It's because of the Rish'at Hagoyim Ha'eleh. It's because they are so bad that God's going to make you be successful. It's not because you're so good. It's because they're bad. They're worse than you. It's like if you go to fill out a lottery ticket here in Winnipeg, you're going to say, God, let me win the lottery. Why? Not because I'm so good. But I'm better than the average citizen of Winnipeg because I keep 613 commandments. They, at most, keep 7. So make me win the lottery because I'm better than them. I'm not wonderful, but comparatively, I'm better. So Moshe Rabbeinu makes this statement to the Jewish people. And I always wondered, how did the Jewish people take it? When he said that, What did they say? And I believe that Moshe Rabbeinu was giving a very basic truth about community and about Jewish life in general. What do I mean? It says in Pirkei Avot that if you succeeded in learning Torah or teaching Torah, you shouldn't feel so great. Al tachzik tova la'atzmecha. Why? Do you remember the end of it? Ki lekach. Because that's who you were created for. When God created you, He said you have the capacity to do it. Because you have the capacity to do it, don't think it's a major achievement. Because it's natural for you to do. It's like when you go into the army at the beginning, when you first get into basic training, then they make you run, I don't know, a mile. Because they came to the conclusion that you have the capacity to run a mile. After a month of basic training, what do you think you have the capacity to do?
2 miles.
2 miles, etc. I was speaking to Rabbi Ellis about the importance of schnapps in Judaism, the importance of drinking liquor, and in my particular opinion, single malt. And I told him that in order to start small, have a little bit, then a little bit more. By the time you build it up, you can have once a week on Shabbos morning a small cup, and that's good. A whole bottle, I hope not. Not too drunk, but a little bit is okay. So what I believe Moshe is saying is that you have the capacity to do it, so don't feel so good about yourself. In other words, it's not that you're great tzaddikim. If you keep the Torah, that's the norm. It's not so great, it's not so terrible. It's the norm. It's what you should be doing. And this, in my opinion, is something that goes to the very fabric of running a community. I don't like communities in which rabbis or leaders come out and tell the people, listen, you don't know anything about the Torah, keep your mouth shut and let me paskin halacha. Let me decide Jewish law. Or a president can come along and say, listen, you haven't seen the books and you haven't seen the financial situation of the synagogue. Keep your mouth shut. Leave it to the experts. When it comes to keeping the Torah, we in our religion have a very big difference between us and the Catholics and other religions. In Catholicism, for example, there's a rift between the priest and the flock, between the shepherd and the flock. The shepherd has three wonderful, what do we call them? The three promises, the three oaths. No? Celibacy? Keep on going. And poverty. But you'll never see the priest come and tell the flock, this is what you guys should do. He's saying, this is what I should do. Oh, I can't get married, but I'll officiate at your weddings. In Judaism, we don't believe in that. In Judaism, we believe that if the rabbi's obligated, the people are obligated. And vice versa. If the people are exempt, then the rabbi's exempt. There's no rift between the two. We're equal. It could be the rabbi is a nutcase that decided to actually stand at the helm of a community. And we all know a rabbi is not a job for a good Jewish boy. But, having said that, he has the same obligations and exemptions like anyone else in the so-called flock. So what I believe Moshe is saying is, lo b'tzit katcha v'yosho levavecha, don't think that you're righteous or you're superly honest. You're doing what you're supposed to naturally do, keep the Torah. And therefore, because you're doing what you're naturally supposed to do, you'll win. They're terrible. You're doing what you're supposed to do. But don't think you're amazing, because you're not. You're doing what you're naturally supposed to do. And this statement, in my opinion, gives us encouragement. Why does it give us encouragement? At the beginning, we started out by saying that if a rabbi said this, he'd probably be thrown out. I think this gives us great encouragement. What is the statement basically telling us? That we have what? We have the ability to keep the Torah. We have the ability to learn Talmud. We have the ability to analyze a parsha. We have the ability to give a lecture on Jewish topics. Not because we went through 15 years of learning and studying and became experts, but naturally the way we were born, it fits in naturally to who we are. It's not something, as it says later in the book of Devarim, that's in the heavens or that's far away in the seas. It's something that we can naturally do. So when you come to a community and you tell people, listen, come to Minyan, the worst thing in the world you can do is to say Minyan is for the select 10, or Shabbos is for the elite, and learning Talmud is for the elite. God forbid! Everyone can do it. If we didn't assume that, there wouldn't be a community. There'd be, just like in the airlines, there'd be the elite club, and the super elite club, and the peasants. We don't got that in communities. In communities, we all can do everything because we all have the capacity naturally to do everything. And therefore, we can lead a community just like anyone else. Everyone sitting around this table could potentially give a lecture, and everyone here can serve on a board, and everyone here could be a member, and everyone here could read the Torah, and everyone here could be a chazan. If you want to, if you feel that's something that speaks to you, then that's something that you can naturally do. And therefore, I end today by saying to you that I believe that especially in this community that I've been privileged to be now the second time, which I hope is the beginning of many times, I believe that in this community, the people I've met, the people that I've been exposed to, the people that I had the privilege of spending two Shabbases with, are people that genuinely not only have the natural capacity to grow Jewishly, they have, I would say, the natural motivation to do it. They're thirsty and they're hungry. Not just for food, but for more than that. And it's actually up to you, the people sitting around this table, to encourage that. Because if I'm not mistaken, the people sitting around this table are what we would call the people that are more devoted. They come to Minyan every day and not just once a week. They're not the three times a year Jews, they're the three times a week Jews. And these are the people, you guys, are the people that I think can really push their community forward. With smiling to people coming into shul for the first time. Hospitality, many other things, to just try to get them to understand that the Torah lifestyle is not foreign, it's not difficult, it's natural, and it could be done. It could be done. And allow me to end with a story. We have a rabbi in a community in South America, and when he got to the community, he got off the plane and he had a long beard, and the president of the community didn't have a liking to him because he looked too religious. And the president didn't want that for the community. For whatever reason, he didn't go on a visit. In Winnipeg, they're, thank God, at least smarter than that. And they invited Rabbi Ellis to a visit prior for him, to him taking the position. But in this community, they did it all via emails and correspondence and telephone calls. They didn't do a Skype interview. No, they didn't do a Skype. So the president of the community never saw the rabbi. The rabbi gets off the plane. He didn't have a trim beard like me. He had a very long beard. He had a family custom not to cut his beard. So he had a very long beard. He wore a knitted kippah. I don't know if that means anything, but he wore a knitted kippah. He served in the army. He has a college degree. But he gets off the plane, and the president at the first meeting says, "The rabbi is too religious for us. This will never work. This will never work." After about a month, the president came into the rabbi's office and asked to see him, closed the door and said, "Rabbi, I owe you an apology." "What?" He said, "You didn't know this, but at the board meeting, right after you came, I said that we're in trouble. The rabbi is too religious for us. And I'm happy to say to you now that I believe that you're normal." The rabbi didn't know how to take it. He called me up and he says, "I just had this meeting and I was called normal. Is that a compliment or not?" And without hesitating, I told him that is the best compliment a rabbi can take from anyone. If you're religious and you keep the Torah and Shabbos and Kashrus and you really suffer on the one hand, but you're fulfilled on the other by keeping this wonderful Jewish lifestyle, and after all that you're still called normal, that's the most amazing compliment. You know why? Because that shows that your Torah lifestyle fit in comfortably to the lifestyle around you. If, however, you're called abnormal, or you're called something like too religious, too pious, there's no hope. You know why?
You don't fit in with
anyone. You don't fit in with anyone. More than that, who wants to be pious? I just want to be a normal person. I don't want them to say I'm superly pious. I want to be normal. I want to joke, and I want to go to the movies, and I want to keep Shabbat. I want to be normal. And I believe that the best compliment anyone can get is that, "Oh, you're normal." Or the best compliment the shul can get is, "Oh, the shul is normal. I'll come to shul because it's not this amazing place that I can't connect to. It's a normal place. I can go in, and I can enjoy, and I can feel at home, and I can still get spirituality, and I can get a beautiful sermon, and a nice service, and a kiddush. It's normal. It's not something that doesn't fit in comfortably to my life." The day in which Torah does not fit in comfortably to our lives is the end of the Torah lifestyle. The day that it does fit in, we have a future. And therefore, what song do we sing when we put the Torah back in the ark? And with this I conclude. What's the song? Eitz Chaim Hi Lamachazikim Ba. Let's translate those words into English. The tree of life it is to those that hold it. What does it mean, the tree? It's a tree of life. What does it mean, tree of life? It means it fits into life. It's not above and beyond life. It's not the priest that has three oaths, one of them celibacy, the other poverty and whatnot, that doesn't fit into life. It fits exactly into life. It doesn't go against marriage. It tells you how to work out a beautiful marriage. It doesn't go against eating. It tells you how to sanctify the eating experience. It doesn't go against taking vacations. The opposite is true. If the Torah fits into life, it's a Torah of life.
If the Torah does not fit into life, it's a pious something above and beyond life, there's no future. Who would want to be pious and up there? They want to be here on earth with 2 feet on earth. The most important comment that we have to say to ourselves day in and day out, when people come through these doors that have never been here before, when people are looking and seeking, is Torah is normal. Torah fits into life. Doesn't go against life. It sanctifies life. Brings life to a higher level. But God forbid it's not against life. So therefore, I end by saying, it's my hope and prayer that more and more people will see, when they look at you, the devoted part, come to Minyan every day, when they see you, they'll be able to say, ah, these people are normal. The Torah must be normal. Let me see if I want a part of it. Thank you.